and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and the rest of Africa on this Wednesday, December 4th, 2024. Health authorities in Eastern Equatorial State are asking residents to take voluntary HIV tests.
What we are lacking is doing awareness. This is what we are lacking totally in the country. We are expecting the Minister of Health at least to lobby for projects that is creating awareness.
And President Joe Biden leaves Angola after a three-day visit.
Very proud to be the first American president to visit Angola. And I'm deeply proud of everything we have done together to transform our partnership thus far. There's so much ahead of us, so much we can do.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Health authorities in Eastern Equatorial State are calling on HIV-positive individuals to seek advice on how to live with the virus. The officials say voluntary testing could help stop the spread of the virus in the state. For VOA News, Kaltuma Vanessa reports from Torit.
AIDS is a disease that weakens the immune system, gradually destroying the body's ability to fight infection and certain cancers. AIDS is caused by human immune deficiency virus or HIV, which is spread most often through sexual contact, shared or contaminated needles or syringe. Eastern Equatorial State officials says they are working with non-profit organizations in different government health facilities across the state to offer support to HIV patients. Martin Okot, Magui County Health Director, says the county has registered an increase in HIV/AIDS infections. Okot says the state Ministry of Health should create awareness on the dangers posed by HIV.
HIV is one of the public health issues in the county. Currently, the data we have and those who are under ART service are estimated to 3,500. Those are currently client data positive. They are non-status and under ARV. And we have the 9 health facilities that are giving service, ART services in the county. And what so far we are lacking, though we have the services, HIV services, especially the treatment and testing, what we are lacking is doing awareness. This is what we are lacking totally in the county.
Flora Alfred is the coordinator for HIV/AIDS in the State Ministry of Health. She encourages all married couples to get tested for HIV.
So for ANC, HIV testing is compulsory because we wanted the mother to deliver child free from the HIV infections. So in all primary health centers, HIV services are there in the counties. Testing HIV from MCH, either from antenatal, is compulsory. You cannot refuse that one. It's the package. You will be tested for HIV, syphilis, high blood pressure, hemoglobins. All these things should be tested because they wanted you to be free and so that you should produce also the child.
An estimated 160,000 people in South Sudan are living with HIV. Only 34% of them are on ART. Torit resident Regina Iolonga, a mother of two, works as a mentor at the Torit State Hospital. She says she got infected with HIV in 1999 and her husband died of the infection in 2000. She says she has faced a lot of stigma from the community, including from her own family.
My own relative abandoned me because I have HIV. They said I am now useless. My firstborn child also abandoned me that time. But now she has realized it's normal to have HIV. Even my sister that time refused me to touch her children. There are a lot of challenges when living with HIV. You need to have a strong heart. Many people are sick, but they fear the stigma.
The National Ministry of Health says South Sudan's HIV prevalence rate is estimated to be 1.9% for people aged 15 to 49, but health officials are concerned about the increasing number of new HIV infections. Patrick Loyette says he has lived with HIV for 18 years, but thankfully all his children are HIV negative.
What made me to come out is because at any time anyone can die, not only because of HIV. I also got encouragement from people who have the virus, and the church tells us that the death can come at any time. That's why I was attached to the church, and it has encouraged me, and I am now free. Even my children are not positive because I take the drug in time.
In 2022, an estimated 6,100 people died of AIDS in South Sudan. An estimated 140,000 children are orphaned because of AIDS in South Sudan. Bibiana Candido is a member of the State HIV/AIDS Commission in Torit. She says the commission has no resources to do its work in Eastern Equatorial State. The U.S.-based Center for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, works with the South Sudan Ministry of Health and other partners to strengthen the country's health system. Other partners, including the National AIDS Commission and the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria. The CDC says its implementing partners provide HIV testing and treatment support across the Equatorial region and Lake State. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa reporting from Eastern Equatorial State Capital, Torit.
On day three of his visit to Angola, U.S. President Joe Biden toured the Lobito Port Terminal Corridor of the Trans-Africa Summit today. The president said Tuesday that the end of his administration also marks the beginning of a new relationship between the U.S. and Africa. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell reports from Luanda, Angola, where Biden is making a historic visit.
This is Joe Biden's first trip to the African continent as president, and also his last. After a short stop in the tiny island nation of Cabo Verde, he landed in Angola late Monday for a two-day trip with a packed agenda, as he told President João Lourenço when they met at Luanda's pink-hued presidential palace.
I'm very proud to be the first American president to visit Angola, and I'm deeply proud of everything we have done together to transform our partnership thus far. There's so much ahead of us, so much we can do.
His administration's top Africa advisor told VOA that Biden sees Angola as Exhibit A of a collaborative relationship with Washington. Francis Brown is Senior Director for African Affairs at the National Security Council.
We, the United States, are working with Angola on a few really important things. One is bolstering peace and security in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Another is growing economic opportunities in the region. A third is technological and scientific cooperation.
Biden also toured the nation's slavery museum, where he acknowledged the deep blood ties between Angola and the United States, and he painted an optimistic picture of the future.
Although I don't know exactly what the future will hold, I know the future runs through Angola. Through Africa. I mean it sincerely. I'm not kidding.
Human rights horrors are far from a thing of the past, rights groups say. Kate Hickson is Advocacy Director for Africa at Amnesty International USA.
Amnesty has repeatedly documented excessive and lethal force to disrupt peaceful demonstrations. Not only is lethal force used in these demonstrations, but the victims' families do not have recourse to access to justice. We've also seen several repressive laws passed since 2020. Since 2020, it's been illegal to criticize the president. More recently, this year, we've seen two laws approved that further threaten the rights to freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, and the media.
Brown told VOA that the president always raises these concerns privately.
He never shies away from talking about democracy and human rights issue with counterparts. And I think that's pretty consistent with the way he's been throughout his long career in public service.
Biden wraps his visit Wednesday with a trip to the port city of Lobito, where a new U.S.-financed rail line brings raw materials from Africa's interior to this bustling port. Anita Powell, VOA News, Luanda.
From Angola, we move to Kenya. As the world marked the International Day of Persons with Disabilities on Tuesday, Kenyan banks and financial institutions are being urged to employ more people living with disabilities and invest in programs that cater for their financial needs and services. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Kenyan banks have improved their accessibility to people living with disabilities by redesigning their entrances for easy access and creating special desks to serve them better, according to the Kenya Bankers Association. Despite the progress made, still more is needed to create financial inclusion for such people in employment. The association's report says only 1% of disabled people is employed in the banking sector. The acting head of the Kenya Bankers Association, Raymond Molenje, calls for the improved employment opportunities for them in the coming years.
So it's a challenge that we need to intentionally work on this, be able to see within the next year, within the next 2 years, can we move that to 2%, 3%, you know, for government, there's actually a target of, for the government workforce, every institution ought to be at 5%. So that's government by law. But as private sector, I think we need to even be far ahead of government.
Almost 1 million Kenyans live with some form of disability, according to the country's 2019 census. Seven banks in Kenya participated in a four-month-long project to understand the challenges faced by people with disabilities in accessing financial services in the country. Equity Bank is one of the companies participating in the project. The bank's advisor on diversity, equity and inclusion, Iram Bahawal, said some digital services do not tend to the needs of disabled people.
So some of these apps are not friendly to those with dyslexia. They're not friendly to those with epilepsy. They're not friendly to those with low vision, right? So looking at all this and saying some of these things are quick kills. We just need to tweak some of these back-end codes and it becomes accessible.
Julius Mbora is an advocacy officer from Inebo, an organization that empowers people with disabilities. He says such employment can improve the service delivery of banks to disabled people.
Now that they are embracing disability inclusion and bringing persons with disabilities on board as their workforce, they should endeavor to make sure that their assets, internal assets for platforms, communication, and also their service delivery should be fluid and accommodative of persons with disabilities. Because once you employ a person with a disability, reasonable accommodation is one of the areas we should look at and to ensure that there is conducive working environment for persons with disabilities.
The Banking Association and other stakeholders in the financial sector moving forward say they will focus on mobile applications, online banking, bank statements, ATMs, social media and employment software applications. The Banking Association will review the recommendations received from the four-month projects in the coming months for applications across the banking sector. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Africa elects another female president. Find out how after the break.
I'm Robert Wane from South Sudan in capital Juba. My proverb is in Bari language, which says, Lele ngutu bain, logon jijukin, nyokunje kingajin kanyet, itolipudian, madikonje gokonan, tukorean, kode tumatan. In English, which says, no one can reverse his or her age to childhood, no matter what wealth or position he or she may have. Thank you so much.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Namibia's political parties claim long lines, faulty electronic devices, a shortage of ballots, and the inability of some people to vote by the end of election day as reasons that the process cannot be deemed as free, fair, and credible. The Electoral Commission of Namibia, in a statement to media, admitted these shortcomings but says they did not have a substantial bearing on results. On Tuesday night, the Electoral Commission of Namibia, the ECN, declared
Nyitembo Nandi as the a member of the ruling SWAPO party as the winner of the election. Vitalio Angola reports from Windhoek, Namibia.
Before election results were announced, leaders of opposition parties that contested Namibia's elections gathered at a hotel to brief the media on what they say was an election that fell short of democratic standards. Rallying behind Panduleni Itula of the Independent Patriots for Change, IPC, a party which came in second in the election, the parties together signaled they would launch a court challenge to the announced outcome of an election, saying it was fraught with irregularities. The parties were all noticeably absent from the official announcement ceremony, except for the Affirmative Repositioning Movement, AR, which finished third, winning 6 out of the 96 seats up for grabs. Job Amupanda, leader of the AR, spoke to journalists after the announcement.
Of course, we hope that there's a rerun. It's the best option for Namibia. Yeah, I mean, we don't even need to convince you, even you as journalists. Some of you said, stood in queues for 5 hours, you couldn't get an opportunity to vote. So we don't need to convince anybody about this. So we would hope that there must be a rerun in this election. It's the best decision any person. I would have thought that everyone would believe that this is a sham election.
Spokesperson of Namibia's Electoral Commission, Divet Siluka, says all political parties have been invited to a stakeholder engagement to hear their dissatisfaction with elections and to determine a way forward. The election authority says a rerun is out of the question and the results of the election will stand.
I think what is clear to state here is that the 27 polls have been in accordance with the provisions of the Electoral Act, been declared by the chairperson of the commission as free, fair and a true reflection of the Namibian people.
Political analyst Raquel Andreas, who has observed elections in several countries, told VOA the onus is on the Electoral Commission of Namibia, or ECN, and not the political parties to determine the outcome of the elections. But she notes the commission should be held accountable for what she termed a disastrous election process fraught with irregularities.
It has become a norm whether we had this mass level of incompetency displayed by ECN or not. I think there should be some parties that feel grieved. So it's up to them to follow the appropriate channels to get the recourse that they need, the redress that they need. But in terms of their choice to stay away, again, that's a form of protest, feeding into their agenda of trying to find some sort of answers. It's to be expected. It's not just unique to Namibia alone.
During the last elections 5 years ago, the IPC presidential candidate, Panduleni Itula, who ran as an independent and came in second, sought to have the results set aside due to the use of electronic voting machines without a paper trail. The Electoral Court ruled in his favor, but said the results could not be set aside even though the country should return to the use of ballot papers. Many Namibians foresee another electoral challenge, but believe the court may come to the same conclusion this time. SWAPO lost 10 seats from the previous elections. With just over 1.4 million registered voters, the ECN recorded a high turnout of 76% of eligible voters. But some experts say this figure could have been higher, if not for the irregularities. Vitalio Angula, Windhoek, Namibia.
Still in Southern Africa, Botswana has dropped 14 criminal charges against former President Ian Khama, including illegal possession of firearms and corruption. Khama had argued the case was politically motivated after a fallout with his hand-picked successor, Mogotwetsi Masisi. From Gaborone, Botswana, reporter Mkundisi Dube has the details.
Ian Khama said yesterday is a free man after the state withdrew its charges against him. Khama says he was persecuted by Masisi. Seeking a second term on October 30, Masisi and his Botswana Democratic Party resoundingly lost to the opposition. Khama told the gathering in his Sorowe village in the country's central district that he had enjoyed a difficult time under the Masisi government. He says he has quit politics to focus on his new duties as a paramount chief, a traditional role for his Vanuatu tribe. He says the previous administration persecuted him, accusing him of stealing 100 billion pula from the Reserve Bank. He says he was accused of keeping unlicensed firearms and was constantly harassed. Kama says he looks forward to a fresh start. Kama says he wants to tell everyone that his lawyers informed him that the state has withdrawn the case. He says he takes that to believe this is the end and is now a free man, so he can now focus on issues of development. Pius Pico at the Institute of Security Studies in Pretoria says the withdrawal of charges against Kama leaves question marks over the National Prosecuting Authority, the state's prosecuting organization.
The dropping of charges against Nkrumah is not unexpected. However, concerns about the integrity of the National Prosecuting Authority will remain in play. Given this is the same prosecuting authority that ostensibly supported the prosecution of Nkrumah, it would be very helpful if they could provide reasons for why they have now dropped these charges. Simply doing so and expecting the wider public to accept this without question is probably not very helpful in the circumstances.
Even though Kama is now a free man, the former president's family remains in exile in South Africa. Kama says his siblings cannot return as there are still pending cases against them. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Habroni, Botswana.
And here in the United States, President Joe Biden pardoned his son, Hunter Biden, earlier this week, ending a political saga that had divided U.S. lawmakers for years. As VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports, the pardon process at the end of the presidential administration has always been controversial.
Each of us is equal before the law.
With just weeks left in his administration, President Joe Biden granted a pardon to his son, Hunter. The White House on Monday defended the decision to clear the younger Biden of felony gun and tax fraud convictions. Karine Jean-Pierre is the White House press secretary.
He said he wrestled with this and because he believes in the justice system, but he also believes that the war politics infected the process and led to a miscarriage of justice.
Earlier this year, Biden pledged not to issue a pardon, saying that no one in the United States was above the law.
I said I abide by the jury decision, and I will do that, and I will not pardon him.
The top Senate Democrat Tuesday refused to answer multiple questions about the pardon. Chuck Schumer is the Senate Majority Leader.
I got nothing for you on that.
House Republicans investigated Hunter Biden's overseas dealings, arguing Joe Biden should be impeached for benefiting from them, though no persuasive evidence of that was ever provided. Hunter Biden's attorney, Mark Garagos, says the pardon was necessary.
I don't know how anybody would, with a straight face, would argue that it wasn't a politically inspired prosecution.
Biden is not the first U.S. president to pardon a relative, but one legal analyst said the move is troubling. Claire Finkelstein is a law professor at the University of Pennsylvania.
It is quite regrettable that he couldn't set the example of letting justice take its course, and that he had, that he felt he had to take this highly politicized step with pardons, because it does send us down a chute, or at least reinforce a path with regard to using the pardon power in this way.
During his first term, Trump granted executive clemency to 237 individuals, a significant number of whom were convicted of fraud or public corruption. Many of them bypassed the traditional process of applying for a pardon.
Let's not forget that Donald Trump has said in the past that he had the right to self-pardon, which is the ultimate in politicized pardons.
Trump has also pledged to pardon those convicted of attacking the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, in an attempt to overturn the results of the 2020 election. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
In Kenya, tech entrepreneurs had trouble accessing resources as simple as an internet connection, getting an assist from American libraries. The U.S. Embassy in Kenya is now operating 6 tech hubs, the newest of which opened in Nairobi last month. Victoria Munga reports from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
Kevin Apodo's efforts to find spaces to develop his programs and skills for human capital consultancy business were futile for years. Apodo says the costs were out of his reach.
I would say it wasn't easy getting a space. Sometimes maybe you're required to rent or to pay or to go to a hotel, and that would be so expensive.
At the American Corner, a hub designed to provide innovators and entrepreneurs with infrastructure and training, Apodo says he found the help he needed.
They act like resource centers, a place where I could just walk in, or I can just walk in and get maybe access to a laptop or free internet or a space to do a program if I have, you know.
6 hubs dubbed American Corner Mtaani, meaning streets in Swahili, have been set up in Kenya, including one at the Kenya National Library Service that opened November 4th. The U.S. Embassy's Regional Public Engagement Specialist, Shekaria Baxon, says the goal is to provide opportunities at the grassroots level for young innovators to connect, experiment, collaborate, and create.
We have different grant initiatives that we work towards. So right now, this past year, we had an inclusive fashion grant where people got together to figure out how do you make fashion inclusive for persons living with disability, as well as we had a film FUPI grant where people were taught how to create short films in their community.
Experts say a shortage of resources and limited access to funding faced by aspiring tech entrepreneurs in Africa is killing many dreams. Andrew Fastnige is director of the African Tech Summit, a gathering that connects tech startups, corporations, and investors. Fastnige says initiatives that assist Kenyan tech entrepreneurs can pay off for both Kenya and the United States.
When you bring it back to this linkage with the USA embassy, If that can help bridge the USA and Africa and Kenya or Nigeria or Egypt or whichever market it is, that's massive. Because sometimes maybe the technology transfer needs a slight partnership or an introduction.
Government data shows about 20% of Kenyan workers under age 35 were unemployed at the end of 2022. Professor Noah Midamba, a foreign policy expert at the Nairobi's KCA University, says unemployment can be eased through initiatives like the embassies.
If you teach a person how to fish, you know, they can feed themselves better than give them fish. So the relationship we have with America, which goes into supporting a startup company and entrepreneurship environment and creating a structure and education system to be, is what will answer the strategic direction that Kenya need to be.
Kenya's Mombasa, Lamu, and Nakuru counties are among other locations hosting the American Corners. Officials hope that such initiatives will help to bring more young people's innovations to life. Victoria Amunga, VOA News, Nairobi.
Remix. That's all from us on this Wednesday, December 4th, 2024. For more on our programs, visit www.voaafrica.com. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Gwen Uten, and engineer, Joel Gill, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Bye.
trapetago, beto male, ma geleba, tra, kate ba trapetonga, ebibi ya positionne,
nedi kenze positionnang en yeno, to kone,
fola se la melodie t'emporte,
kumule, 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 mama la kumule,